originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you with us, tuned in on Sirius 219 XM, Channel 201, and everyone streaming us worldwide on your computer or mobile device through our website at horseracingradio.net. Welcome to the program, and welcome to another brand new edition of this show as we focus on yet another young and up-and-coming trainer in this sport. And Jude, she's had one heck of a teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. Her dad is one of our favorites, and the only guy we've ever interviewed on Trainer Talk from his fishing boat.
And as we understand it, his daughter, his young 20-year-old daughter, who is going to join us here tonight, is actually doing the first part of the show holding a horse for a farrier. So if at times the phone connection sounds a little goofy, she's working as she's doing the show.
Yeah, she's working. Her dad was fishing. So but there might be a little background noise.
Well, her dad has saddled 937 winners to date. His runners have earned more than $33 million in purses. His daughter has yet to experience that feeling of saddling a winner on her own, but she's done it when she's worked with her dad. But she's only had five opportunities now, just five career starters. She's had a couple of seconds. She's getting close. Her career just 1 month old, and she is Natalie Fox, the 20-year-old daughter of trainer David Fox, who is with us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Natalie, welcome.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, good. We love the dedication, too. You're not even taking time off for the show. You're going to keep working.
No, we got to keep on going. Work can never stop.
And we can hear the horse being shod in the background.
Yeah, hear the hammering. There you go. It's pretty cool.
Who's the horse that you're holding now, Natalie?
Actually, this is a horse I entered for Saturday. Her name is Bonnie Scott, so hoping our race goes.
How many horses do you have right now?
I have six right now.
Nice. Nice. And still awaiting that first victory, but you've been very close and very close recently.
Yeah. Actually, this filly was third for me, first time I ran her off of a 10-month layoff. So I'm hoping that with a race under her belt, she's doing really good. So I'm hoping she'll be my first one on Saturday.
Yeah, that's going to be a great feeling when you break through. There's nothing like it.
Yep. I'd say the hardest is the first one, so...
You know, your dad, or you told me when I called you to do this program that your dad was more excited about you making this decision than you were at first. How about now?
Oh, yeah, he's still my biggest fan. He's, like, my biggest supporter. He always pushes and trying to hustle me new clients all the time, but he loves it. He gets more upset when the horses don't win than I do.
He gets upset in general when his horses don't run well, and I can understand how he feels about yours, because that's got to be a big thrill for him watching you join the family business.
Oh, of course. He loves every second of it, and I'm glad I have him to back me up.
You know, he sent me a text after he sent me your phone number, and it made it a point to tell me that you were doing a great job, and he was extremely proud of you. That has to mean a lot to hear your dad say those words.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, he's one of the top horsemen around, and it does mean a lot, like you said. So it's great.
Have you worked for anybody else besides your dad?
Yeah, so I worked for almost 2 years for Robert Falcone Jr., and I got to travel to New York and California. So, you know, I was with him for a little bit. And then after, when I came back home, I just kind of decided, you know, the opportunity was given to me to train with some horses, and I took it.
Natalie Fox with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. All right, Natalie, let's go back to the beginning, and then we'll talk a little bit more about working with Robert and working with your dad. But has it always been about training horses for you, or was there maybe a different side of things you were looking to get into?
I mean, I've always liked the training aspect. You know, for actually maybe about a year, I worked for the track photographers here at Gulfstream and in New York, so that was always fun, but always horses had the biggest place in my heart. And I knew eventually I'd start training. I just didn't think it'd be at this age.
Well, you know, it's pretty unusual for someone your age to become a trainer. I mean, a lot of people, you know, go through long apprenticeships with different stables, and it takes them 10 or 15 years before they get enough guts. So you must be a pretty game girl.
Yeah, we're trying.
What happened with the photography thing? It just didn't capture you like the horses did in the training side of it?
Yeah, you know, when I started the photography is when I was about 15. And then I started to gallop at age 16. So, you know, that started taking on more and more. And then I just started doing more work for my dad. And it took too much time in the barn where I could go work for the photographers. And honestly, I liked working with the horses more. So,
what's it like growing up as the daughter of a successful trainer like David?
You know, there is some pressure, definitely, especially me starting out, you know, because my dad, you know how he is. He was laughing, gloating that he won his first three races. And I'm like, oh, thanks a lot, Dad. But, you know, I have a lot of good connections thanks to him. You know, and I have someone I can rely on. You know, he's got a good word, and that really helped me out a lot.
Would you go to the barn and hang out with him when you were a little kid?
Oh, all the time. That was like my favorite thing to do, was come to the barn with him and my mom at the time. It was great coming in. I'd rather come here than I would go to school.
Yeah, and he's got such a relaxed barn. I mean, one of the highlights of Mike and I doing these shows together was visiting your dad's barn, and he was so gracious with his time and showed us every horse and explained what each one was doing and how they were doing. And it was really a pleasure to be there.
Yeah, you know, his barn is more about the animal than it is just the number. You know, he really takes his time. He cares about them, you know. So it's a good thing to follow up that I was able to grow up around.
Who was the first horse that your dad trained that you really kind of fell in love with when you first started hanging out with him at the barn?
Oh, man. You know, I had this gray horse that my dad had, and he couldn't outrun me. He was really slow, but his name was, what was it? I think it was Launch the Fluff. And I'm telling you, I was probably two or three. I have pictures of me on them. And I used to call him Fluffy. And that was probably my favorite horse ever. But the first horse I actually really shed rode, I was probably 10 at the time, was Duke of Mischief. So to be able to shed rode a $2 million earner was a big thing.
Yeah, especially when you're 10.
Yeah, I know.
How was he with you? Was he gentle and kind and easy to work with?
Yeah, Duke was a cool horse. He was a really cool dude. You know, he knew who he was, but he also, the horses know who's on their back. So he was always cool.
How about Fluff? No problem with you getting on his back?
Yeah, no. Like I said, I got a picture of me just waving, smiling, as happy as could be on Fluffy.
It's amazing how horses know when they're around kids, and they kind of treat them nicely. They might try to bite an adult or something, but you never see a horse try to bite a little kid.
No, horses are very smart. You know, they know who's on them. They know what's going on.
Did I read, Natalie, that there was a time, even though you were going to the barn and hanging out around the horses, there was a time when you were actually focused a little bit more on dance than you were on the horse side of things?
Yeah, so growing up through my, like, probably from age 6 to maybe even 11 or 12, I danced for like that whole time. And I was always back and forth between, at the time I was riding the show horses. So I was back and forth between the show horses and the dance. And I really, you know, I liked the dance. And then I'd go through a couple months and I'd go back to the horses and I'd go back to dance. And then finally the horses just took over.
Well, you know, Acacia Courtney, who works with us here on the network, former Miss Connecticut, she's big into the dance side of things. Have you talked to her about it?
Yeah, you know, actually I haven't, but I always look at our photos. But, you know, we did a bunch of the same stuff. I did point, I did tap, I did hip hop, I did it all, you know, and I did competitions. And it was a lot of fun while I did it.
You ever tried to teach your dad how to dance?
You know, that man's got two left feet. I don't know how that would work.
I've seen him shake his booty at Gulfstream Park a little. he does need your help. I do too, frankly.
Yeah. Does he ever take you fishing with him?
Yeah, you know, I like going fishing. Unfortunately, fishing doesn't like me. I get seasick, but I like going in the flats. So I can go flats all the time, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, he, you know, he's told me I need to get out there with him. I know he takes Joe Bravo with him all the time. They're big fishing buddies. And he says, you have to come. You'll love my boat. And they have a blast when they go.
Yeah, they are. Just a fair warning, he takes that stuff very seriously. He gets, like, full-on captain mode. Like, he is a different person on the boat. Like, you think he's quiet in the barn? Just wait until you go on the fishing boat with him. He goes into a different mindset.
Really? He gets really focused?
Oh, he doesn't take it lightly. Yeah, it's a big thing.
That's wild.
Is he competitive with the fishing, too?
You know, he's competitive within his own self. He doesn't do any competitions or anything like that. I'm sure if he did, he'd be great. But he just likes to catch all the fish, and then he likes to, like, have these fish fries that he invites everybody to after, you know? So, like, let's say he catches fish on Tuesday. Wednesday or Thursday night, we'll have people from all over the track come into the house, and he'll be cooking up fish for everybody.
That sounds great. There's nothing better than something that was just caught. It's fantastic. I can see how he'd get like that on his boat, because he just has that take charge attitude.
Yeah. One time I went out with him, and I was sick as a dog. I tried taking Dramamine, Bomine, whatever. I was so sick, and it was probably, we weren't even 20 minutes into fishing. And he goes, we're not getting in and going in until we catch our limit, which was like, I think 20 fish at the time. I stayed out on that boat sick as a dog, and he's fishing, not caring. He goes, we got to catch our limit.
I can totally relate. I took Lance Allworth's boat out from San Diego one time, took a bunch of guys from the track fishing. I mean, it was a crazy trip. They still talk about it, and it was like 30 years ago. But I was so sick the whole time, and all I remember is the gold and white striped wallpaper in the head, and it just looked like a river to me. I mean, it was just brutal. And I caught like five fish, even though I was sick. But it was not the greatest trip ever.
Natalie Fox. Natalie's here with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Natalie, so with your dad, when you started learning from him and you started to do more with the horses around the barn, what kind of teacher is he?
You know, he's very patient. You know, he takes his time. I mean, he'll call me out on things, though, if I'm completely wrong, and he'll be like, no, like, this is what's that. But he understands it completely. You know, he started young, and he knows how tough the game is, especially being female and young at the same time. It's definitely not an easy game for me to go head first into.
Is it different being a female in your profession?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, this is a man's world. And I'm not, like, I don't have anything against it at all. I know, but I know it's going to also be a better feeling for me when I do step up. And hopefully, you know, everything goes out as the plan.
Well, you know, it's a man's world in terms of the numbers. I think, you know, the majority of trainers are male. But in terms of people just viewing you as a horse trainer, I think as a sport, don't we do a pretty good job of that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think right now, honestly, my biggest thing is that I'm young.
Yeah. Meaning that you need more experience.
Well, not even in terms of that. Just people see me as young, so they don't think I'm as experienced. You know, I'm 20, but, you know, learning up with my dad and being on the track at such an early age, I can almost say that I have about, you know, 10, 15 years under me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you've been getting on $2 million earners since you were 10.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, that's a thing I think that a lot of people miss in our sport, is the fact that if you're born into it, if you're at the track from the time you're 3 years old, I mean, you know, you learn so much just by osmosis, just by hanging around and watching. And, you know, it's amazing how much you can gather information, you can gather just being at the barn every day, if you're, you know, if you watch and pay attention.
Yeah, exactly. No, and, you know, I learned a lot, you know, being under my dad, but I learned a lot from traveling. You know, being in different barns with different people, you pick up their, what their training techniques are. You learn a lot of different things from multiple different people.
Yeah, compare how Robert Falcone Jr. runs his business to the way that your dad handles things.
You know, it's kind of different because my dad's down here in South Florida, New York, and we were in New York at the time with Robert. So my dad, you know, not saying this in any bad way, but my dad's got nice horses. You know, he doesn't deal with too many claimers. He's got those nicer stake horses. And then working with Rob, I really learned how to deal with the cheaper, lower-level claimers, you know, and how they are different. You know, so I learned a lot from both people. You know, my mom has also been a huge help. You know, whenever I have a question about something that maybe even my dad doesn't know, I'll call my mom up and be like, hey, what do you think? You know, so I got a great system behind me.
Yeah, that's good. I know your parents used to hop in the trailer and take horses all over the place. So it's so nice to be able to, you know, call somebody at a moment's notice and say, what do you think about this? I'm thinking this. What do you think I should do?
Yeah, you know, and my mom, she galloped Big Drama. She galloped Duke of Mischief. She, you know, she was with Dan for, what, 15 years. They were together for a long time, so she's always there, too.
What kinds of things would you lean on her for, Natalie?
You know what she's really good at is nutritional. You know, she's really good at feeding horses and stuff like that, so she's got that under her. That's really great. But with the show horse background, too, it helps a lot. With, you know, in terms of equipment that some people may not know of, or, you know, if a horse, it all comes into different, there's different things that are different aspects.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's neat to be able to rely on so many people that have had so much success in the game. That has to be very helpful to you as you just go ahead and get started. You talked about the difference between handling claiming horses and handling really nice stakes horses, for example, like your dad has in his barn. What's the biggest difference between handling those two?
Well, you know, it all depends on the horse. You know, sometimes these stake horses could all have the same problem that these lower level claimers have, but I find that the big thing with each of these horses, the big difference is mentality and what goes on in their head. You know, you can tell what a nice horse is like as soon as you sit on them, about how they're acting, about what they got going on inside versus these cheaper claimers.
Yeah, it seems like the smartest horses are the best horses.
Yeah, you know, but I really learned a lot once I branched out with Robert and once I started working with these lower horses. That's really where I learned a lot.
Did you experience that too, JT? You kind of ran the gamut. You had some stakes horses. You had some horses that weren't quite as good.
Yeah, well, you have to adjust, you know, for their physical ailments. Sometimes the lesser horses, they might have the ability and the desire, but, you know, their physical problems keep them from performing at a high level. So you have to space their races and you know, train them maybe a little lighter. And getting into their head is so important, right, Natalie?
Yeah, I mean, mentality, I feel like, is half the battle with these racehorses, you know. And my biggest thing is just trying to keep them happy. You know, happy horses run good. So I feel like that's the main thing that I'm mainly concerned about, you know, too.
What's the key to keeping a horse happy when they're at the racetrack?
You know, you don't want to overwork them. If you feel like you got one horse that you're doing too much with and you back off for a couple of days and they start to start playing and they start feeling better, then you know that they don't like to be trained as hard. Or, you know, depends on the certain kind of feed you give them or just how you treat them in general. You know, I ride all my horses, so I know how they're all feeling that day. If I get on one horse and I feel like she's not, you know, not as jumping around, not as happy, then I'll maybe just jog it for a day. But if they're really jumping out of the skin, I'll go ahead and gallop them.
Well, it's interesting you say that because that was going to be my follow-up question. As somebody like myself, who is not like you and not like Jude, I've never trained a horse, probably never will. What are you looking for that tells you if that horse is happy or not? What kinds of signs do they show you?
You know, horses that aren't as happy, you can tell that they're just kind of blasé around the racetrack, or, you know, if they're a little grouchy, you know, there's a lot of different things, but it also depends on a certain animal. You know, every horse has got their own personality. They're all different.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the horse will change overnight. Like they've been in a good mood, they're hitting the ground good and everything, and then you take them out and they're kind of cranky. Now that could be just, you know, one day where they didn't get enough sleep, just like a human or whatever. But if it carries on for a couple days, you know something's bugging them.
Yeah, I highly believe horses have their days like we do. You know, it's just what kind of day it is.
You've now had the chance, Natalie, to travel all over the country, as you mentioned. You were in California, you were in New York, you've trained in Florida now. Is there a difference between preparing a horse for the races in those different areas of the country? Does that play into it?
Yeah, you know, the track surface is a big thing, too, you know, depending on where you are. And I did, you know, I found that training in California, they were able to train their horses harder than we were able to, let's say, here. The track was more forgiving in California than it could be here at times. So, you know, you got different, and then people in New York also train different. You got the two different tracks to train over, so you could, you know, you could base on what you want to do.
Yeah, like training a horse at Belmont Park is totally different than training one at Santa Anita. That's why it's always so amazing when a guy like Bob Baffert, you know, takes a horse from California and is able to be successful with them at Belmont Park. I know the horses are great, but it is a totally different surface and different game.
You know, in different weather conditions, too. We always talk about this.
Yeah, weather.
When we go down to Summit of Speed in middle July or early July, the conditions are much different than they are, say, for the Pegasus World Cup in January. And we often hear that horses coming in from out of town for the Summit of Speed don't handle those conditions very well. Talk a little bit about that, Natalie.
You know, it, like you said, with the weather, it makes a big difference. You know, you could have a horse that's training great and it can rain one day and you have an off track. And then, you know, that horse could not even like that. So, especially being down in Florida, it's so different. You never know what the weather's going to do.
And the humidity's a big factor, too, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, my God. The humidity's crazy down here right now, especially during the summertime. You know, I try to train all my horses. I try to get them all out early. You know, I get here basically first at 5:15, and we try to be done by 8:30, so I'm not going out at 9 o'clock when it's even hotter, you know. Once that sun breaks in, you think that humidity just, it doesn't cut. It's so hot the whole time, even first set. I mean, you come off your first horse and you're dripping. I mean, it's just like one big, you can't even breathe. So it's hard, you know.
You can hear the farrier doing all of the shoeing as Natalie holds the horses as she does the interview with us. Natalie Fox here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Multi-talented, not even taking a break to join us here on the program. That's how dedicated she is to this young career of hers, just over 1 month old. Natalie, were there other trainers outside of your dad when you were growing up that maybe you would watch and pay attention to and even look up to in some ways?
I always like watching the old kind of style training, you know, like Bill Mott, even Todd Pletcher. I like the old style horsemanship that they have going for them, you know. I feel like nowadays, you know, it's all about who's got the fastest horse or whatever. But when it breaks down, the trainers who got the most horsemanship behind them seems to be the ones that prevail the most.
Yeah, well, nothing beats old school. Did you ever get a chance to have a conversation with the chief?
Yeah, you know, so, well, I probably 7 at the time, maybe 10. He used to let me ride his pony circus. So I'd be riding the pony all around here at Gulfstream, you know, at that age. And he was a cool guy to have. I really wish he was still around now for me to talk to, but he was always someone to look up to.
Will you go to those other trainers like Todd, like Bill Mott, and will you kind of talk to them when they're in town and bounce some ideas off of them?
Yeah, you know, once I had a conversation with Chad Brown one time about just sitting down and how he handled it in a business term of aspect, because he's such a great businessman. And I was asking him, you know, how he handled, you know, X amount of horses and how all the employees and everything. So that was helpful. But I'm never afraid to ask someone a question. You know, my ego doesn't get in the way of that at all. I think it's best to ask and get different opinions from everybody.
Yeah, we've heard that from other people, too, about what a great businessman Chad Brown is and how he manages his operation. And a lot of people covet his skills in that regard. Not, you know, not just his training ability and his record, but the fact that he can manage 300 horses seemingly effortlessly.
I think that's the biggest challenge for new trainers too, isn't it, Natalie? And we've heard this from other young trainers that are just getting started. When they talk about the challenges they face, there's challenges on the training side, but the most common answer is the business side of it and learning how to handle your business start to finish. Is that true?
Yeah, it's very true. You know, thankfully, I have a really good bookkeeper behind me. I use my dad's bookkeeper. She's been helping me every step of the way. But it was really hard for me to open up a new business, get my own stable name, you know, and start racking up these employees that, you know, you need to be able to run your business successfully, you know. You know, I've been using T-Lore as a way to help with my bookkeeping. That's big help. But my bookkeeper's always there, too, you know, helping me with that other stuff.
Yeah, it's so important. And a lot of trainers, you know, when I first started out, I didn't know anything about running a business. And I was so concerned about the horses that I didn't really pay that much attention to the business end of it. And I wish I had. But that's what I always tell trainers that ask me, you know, what should I do? And I say, learn the business end, because the horses you already know and love, you're going to take care of that no matter what. But you got to take care of the business first.
Yeah, you know, I love, honestly, to take a business class, and I still can. You know, I've been thinking about taking a business course at night just to help me with that extra stuff, because that's another half of the battle with training. It's just dealing with clients and dealing with owners and how to properly manage your money.
Natalie, how about getting clients at this young stage without that experience behind you? How challenging is that?
You know, it is in a way, but like I said, my dad helped me a lot with clients, and the majority of the clients right now that I have all known me since I was could be able to walk. So, you know, they know when I go around and they know what kind of potential I have, so that's why they're giving me the chance.
Yeah, and you have a special relationship with one of those, and I hope I pronounce his last name correctly. Larry Fugate, did I get it right?
Fugate.
Yeah, talk about that relationship a little bit.
Yeah, so Larry's known me for a long time. His son or his daughter married my dad's cousin or something along that line. I really should know that better, but I don't. But, you know, he's known me since I was little, and he's always had one or two horses here and there. He actually had a good horse with my dad that won a couple of graded stakes named Cash Rules. That's been his best horse. But he's watched me growing up. He gave me my first show horse, you know, my first real show horse. My dad used to train. The horse was slow. And, you know, so they gave him to me as a show horse, and he was really cool. I had him for about a couple of years. And then, you know, that filly Jezebel Jones, she ran first time out for my dad. She ran okay. And we were all kind of just joking around, and he's like, you know what, give that horse to Nat. So, and then I was able to have a good second with her, and unfortunately her last start, she dwelt it in the start, which kind of was not great. But thankfully she was claimed.
Somebody else's problem now.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost funny. I had the starter calling me right after, hey, you got to bring that horse to the gate now. And I was like, actually, I don't.
Yeah. Call somebody else. Check on that new trainer. I'm not responsible anymore. She's Natalie Fox. She's our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a quick commercial break. Stay with us. We'll be back with the second half of the show, and we'll talk about some of the big-time horses that Natalie has been with as she worked with her dad for all those years. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
On November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Fasig Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at FasigNovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Discover the difference with Hiddenbrook Racing Partnerships. With 83% winners, 17% stakes winners, and 17% greatest stakes runners from horses purchased, partners enjoy success at the highest levels. Hiddenbrook has already campaigned a champion, 8 stakes winners, 3 greatest stakes winners, and 8 greatest stakes horses. In 2018, the partnerships have achieved 29% wins, with 46% of starters finishing in the money. Discover the difference at HiddenbrookFarmKY.com. Stuart Morris offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation and would like to thank their owners, clients, and team. Their success is because of you.
Henley's Joy gets up just in time.
And our Brain Trust gets up on the rail to win.
Malagasy to win the Rebel.
With 10 two-year-old winners already in 2018 and multiple stakes place horses over the past 3 years, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Be sure to visit the Stuart Morris consignment in Barn 35 at the Keeneland September Yearling Sale.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They come for home now. Warrior's Reward is winding up on the grandstand side, but Big Drama the one to catch. Big Drama is clear. Warrior's Reward down the center is coming home gamely. Amazing Destiny running a big one. Smiling Tiger and running on late is Wise Dan, but it's Big Drama digging deep and finding more. Big Drama in front to Amazing Destiny. Big Drama will win it. Big Drama has won the sprint. Amazing Destiny second. Smiling Tiger will be in a photo with Supreme Summit, who came from last to be in that photo for third.
Trevor Denman with the call of the 2010 Breeders' Cup Sprint beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs. Big Drama getting the victory that afternoon, and he would go on to win 11 of 19 starts in a career that saw him earn more than $2.7 million for trainer David Fox. David has trained so many outstanding horses in his career, and now his daughter, Natalie, just getting started with her career and training on her own at the age of 20. And she is still looking for that elusive first victory, but we know it's coming soon. She's our special guest here on Trainer Talk tonight. You're going to hear more from her coming up in just a minute, right after we tell you about the big weekend coming up at Woodbine, including the $800,000 Woodbine Mile, which is a win in your inn for the Breeders' Cup Mile Division. That comes up this Saturday as part of a huge card. The Woodbine Mile expected to feature Divisadero, Delta Prince, and Mr. Haverkamp, among other top standouts. Other key races on the weekend are the Grade 1 $300,000 Northern Dancer Saturday afternoon, along with the Grade 2 Canadian Stakes on Saturday. On Sunday, enjoy a pair of Grade 1s at Woodbine with the $250,000 Natalma Stakes and the Grade 1 Summer Stakes as well. Both of those figure to be really, really good. Wagering pool guarantees for Saturday. Well, how about this? A pick four with an early $100,000 guarantee and a late pick four with a $200,000 guarantee. And then the pick five has the late guarantee of $200,000. And, of course, mandatory payouts on the jackpot high five in the last race on Saturday, all at Woodbine. You can visit woodbineentertainment.com to learn more. Well, Natalie, we heard that clip of Big Drama getting the victory at Churchill in 2010. I know that brings back a lot of nice memories for you. Tell us about that day.
Yeah, I mean, that call brought goosebumps back to my arms. I was young, but we had a lot of fun. I still remember vividly him coming down the stretch And it was such a big experience, you know, for all of us, especially my dad and my mom, when they both worked so hard with that horse. So it was really cool for them, for that to pay off for them.
You were at Churchill with them that day, I take it.
Yeah, I was at Churchill that day, and it was my first time being at Churchill, and, you know, it obviously treated us right. So.
You were 12 years old.
Yeah, I guess that'd make me 12.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big thing.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I could only imagine when I was 12 being part of something like that. That's fantastic.
It's huge.
Do you remember your reaction when he crossed the finish line?
I remember everybody crying.
That happens a lot at Churchill Downs. A lot of people cry at Churchill Downs.
Yeah. Well, it happens, you know. And I'm a big emotional person, so, you know, emotionally it was a big deal.
You know, your dad has an awful lot of guts. Not only is he a good trainer, but he allowed Jude and I to be in the stall with Big Drama one day, and I told him that was the kiss of death. He shouldn't do that, but didn't seem to matter to Big Drama.
No, he was so good he overcame you.
Seemed to be good luck for you guys. I remember it was the year before that when he was running in the Preakness against Rachel Alexandra, and the mayor of Maryland, or the governor, wanted to come and see Big Drama, but he was sleeping. The horse was a big sleeper. And I ran him out the barn. Like, this little 11-year-old girl, like, can't run this guy out of the barn. Like, no, you can't come see this horse. He's sleeping. Like, could you imagine?
Wait, all right, so he was really that deep of a sleep? He would just go out and take a nap, and that would be it?
He was a big sleeper. That was his biggest thing. And, you know, that was what we really liked about him is, you know, they say that horses that try are good sleepers, and he would be sleeping all day long, especially on race day. He knew when he was running.
Yeah, that horses do, the good ones especially, they know when it's race time, and they do take care of themselves. They know what's ahead, and that's one of the nice things about training older horses is they kind of have that sense of they're going to the races, and they prepare themselves.
Oh, definitely, yep. Especially that week going up to it, you can tell when they know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Natalie Fox here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Did you ever get to shed row Big Drama?
No, I never shed row him, but, you know, we grazed him a couple times.
Yeah, that must have been cool, just to be able to stand there and look at him and know that, you know, this is a horse that meant so much to your family, to your dad's career, to your mom's career, and even to you as a little girl. It had to be pretty special.
Oh, it was awesome being able to be around a horse like that. I mean, not too many people can, and I'm very fortunate for that.
All right, so outside of Big Drama, outside of Duke of Mischief, who you mentioned in the first half of the show, talk about some of the other horses that have meant a lot to you, even if they weren't your dad's horses necessarily, but other horses that you've fallen in love with over the years.
You know, Sheer Drama was, another horse of my dad's, but she was a hard horse to work with. You know, she was a redhead filly, and she was not the easiest, but she was when I first started, when we took horses to Saratoga, when I first got my assistant's license. And that filly really tested me because I was getting on her. She was not easy to ride at all. She was tough. And she really, like, taught me a lot about how to deal with fillies and the best way to take your time and be patient with them. You know, her and I was thankful enough to be around the barn when I first started with Robert when he had Mind Your Biscuits. So that was cool, too, to be able to travel with them. You know, I went with them to Breeders' Cup. I think it was 16 when he was put up for second. So
talk about the filly thing and the difference between training a filly and a colt.
Well, you know how girls are. We're a little emotional at times. So, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, I get along with the fillies because maybe, I don't know, maybe it takes one to know one. But each filly, they all got their own attitudes. You know, I'll take a good mare over a good gelding or a good colt any day. I really do like those fillies because most of the time they do try hard for you.
Yeah, I remember when Sheer Drama was getting ready to run in the personal ensign at Saratoga back in 2015, and we stopped by the barn to visit with your dad, and Joe Bravo was there, and I remember I was going to try and get a picture with Sheer Drama, and he said, you might want to think twice about that, with getting so close to her, because as you mentioned, she'd come after you. She wasn't necessarily a dainty, quiet little filly, was she?
No, that filly had an attitude and a half to her own. So personal ensign week, it was just me and my dad. And so we were grooming her. We were, you know, she was tough to groom, too. She was not an easy horse. And like you said, she was mean. But she'd also have those moments. You pull out a peppermint, and she was your best friend. She was smart.
Yeah, I think Joe Bravo had a few peppermints for her. He knew.
We know Joe's smart. You know, the thing about fillies, I think sometimes is they just want to do their own thing. They want to be left alone to do things the way they want to do them. I always used to tell people the reason I won so many races with fillies was because I let them call the shots. And I think sometimes, you know, if you and I think it was important that somebody like you got on her, because girls always seem to have a little bit more patience and are willing to do give and take with a horse, where sometimes the guys want them to do it their way, and the fillies can get a little bit sensitive to that and start to resent it.
Yeah, like I said, we're girls. We want it done our way. You know, and out of the six horses I have one gelding. So you got to imagine how that barn's run.
That poor guy.
Even my employers, I only have one man working for me. So that poor guy is head over heels.
Is that by design, or is it just the way it came up?
It's just the way it comes up. So he's my groom, Wilson, he's a ladies' man for sure.
Yeah, talk about your team a little bit, Natalie. That's part of the challenge of getting started as a young trainer, too, is getting the right people with your philosophy and on the same page as you. So talk about them.
You know, thankfully, like I said, I have a good support system behind me. So, you know, my mom, my boyfriend, my dad, you know, they're all big help. And then I have my groom, Wilson, who's always there every day, can always rely on him, and my hot walker. She, Orphelia, she's really good help too. You know, they're the kind of people who you'll never see them sitting down. They're always working hard. So I'm able to take a deep breath and just, we're able to relax, go through the morning where it's not such a big, you know, cluster of a mess.
How many horses would you like to have, ideally?
Ideally? I'd like to be like Chad Brown.
Would you?
Who wouldn't want to be Chad Brown?
Exactly. I'd like to have 100 stake winners. But ideally, honestly, I wouldn't mind 50. You know, just because then you can be on a personal note with every horse and you know enough where it's still not exactly, it's not a small operation at all. But I can have a hands-on with each horse in a barn full of 50.
Well, I think that's why I sounded surprised when you said that you'd like to be like Chad Brown, because it's always amazing to me the way that guys like Chad and Todd and Steve Asmussen, who have so many horses and horses spread all over the country, keep up with that structure that they have, and they do it, and they do it very well. But it's because, they'll be the first to tell you, it's because they have really good assistants in those other areas. You, to me, Natalie, sound like the type of trainer that likes to be there around your horses, likes to put your hands on them every day, and you can't do that if you have horses all over the country.
No, that makes it hard, but hopefully, I mean, at some point I am that successful. I don't want to not say that I don't want that, but like you said, I do like being hands-on, and I do like the amount of horses I have at the moment, because, like I said, I can get on all of them. I can see how they are every day, you know, personally.
How are you going to handle it when you can't get on all of them? Like when you get up to like 25 and you just can't get on 25 horses a day?
Well, then I'm going to have to pick my favorite.
the trainer's always right, right?
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a little disheartening for you. Is there an advantage to being able to get on your horses every morning?
I find there to be a huge advantage. You know, like I was saying earlier, if a horse is had an off day, I can feel the way their body movement is. I can tell the way, I can feel their energy through them, you know, through my hands, through my seat. I can feel how they are, you know. So, like I was thinking earlier, I have this one horse. And he had his first breeze for me after a race over the weekend. And today was the first day, you know, since I claimed him, that he's really been happy, strong. And I know that breeze woke him up, but I can feel that under me. You know, I can feel how he was feeling. So that was a good feeling today for me to be able to feel.
What's the name of that horse?
That horse's name is Sherpa.
Sherpa, I like that.
That's named after your wife.
Cool little dude. That's
Sherpa.
That's my only. That's my one gelding in the barn, and he's a cool little horse. He's probably one of the barn favorites for sure.
What makes him so cool?
Just his attitude. You know, he's got such a cuddly attitude when you're around him, but when he goes out on the track, he's all business. He's not an easy horse to gallop. He's a little quirky, but he's fun to ride. So, and I'm really hoping, I've claimed him about less than a month ago, probably 3 weeks ago, and I'm really hoping he should run big. He's doing really good.
I would think as a rider / trainer, it's a big advantage to be able to adjust on the fly based on what you feel your horse is doing underneath you. Like it, when you go out to the track and you have in mind, maybe you're going to gallop the horse, but the horse is maybe not in the mood for it. So you can just jog the horse. You don't have to have the rider second guess you or whatever. I would think that would be really a great advantage and kind of a cool thing to be able to do.
Oh, I mean, it's huge. You know, I'll have a horse set to gallop that day, and I'll come in, and they're just maybe a little more sore this day than they were the other day, or they're just not feeling it, you know? You know, I have days where I go to the gym after I train. I'm just not feeling it some days. So, you know, maybe I won't run or I won't do as many weights. But, so they're the same. You know, they are athletes. They're in a full-time training. So you got to kind of take it easy with them and take it with a grain of salt. But sometimes they just don't feel like it. So I'll go back and I'll change it to a jog day for them. And I don't mind that at all, because the next day they're feeling even better, where I know if I were to gallop that horse that day, maybe it would have just taken me another notch down.
Yeah, it's interesting. What was it that you saw in Sherpa that led you to claim him?
You know, I really liked his form. He was always competitive. He was always right there in the money. There were a couple times that they tried something, maybe to step him up, and he wasn't quite that kind of horse. But he just... I'm watching his replays. I'm really big into watching replays before I claim horses, you know, so I don't only go off the form. I like to look at their Ragus and Sheet numbers. I like to watch the replays. I like to see if I can find them on the track too, you know, and thankfully I was able to see him on the track right before I was able to claim him. So I knew how he'd warm up. I knew how he was and that he was okay. So I liked the horse. The horse stood out, and I'm hoping, you know, the day that I claimed him, he ran a good race, so I'm hoping that I'll be able to make it a win for him.
I like the way you rattled off that litany of things. Look at the sheet numbers, watch the replay. I mean, you did that rapid fire. That was pretty cool. are you a good handicapper?
You know, honestly, I suck. You know, maybe I'm really good, so I don't know why. Maybe it's just a coincidence. I seem to be good at picking a horse out in the paddock without even looking at a form. There's something about it that I just like looking at the horse's presence, and I can be like, I like the four horse, and I won't even know what their sheet numbers look or their form will look like, and they'll end up winning. And it's weird. It's never happened just once. It's happened multiple occasions.
Yeah, I think that's a great way. I used to tell the people from UK Horse Racing Club about that. I said, I can sit here and explain how to read the form and all that to you, but you all are horse people, and you should just go down to the paddock and pick out the horse that you'd like your parents to buy you for your next, you know, horse show or whatever.
Yeah.
And bet on that one. You'll have more fun and be outside and really enjoy the sport.
Yeah. And it's funny too. Horses know what they're running against, you know? So for instance, going back to one of my dad's first big horses, his name was 41 Carats. And actually I train for the people now. Those people own Sherpa, who used to own 41 Carats. So he, that horse was in, if he knew he was in a good spot, he couldn't keep his feet on the ground. But as soon as he knew he was over his head, he'd get really quiet. And it was weird, and he'd just run kind of average. But like I said, when he knew that he could beat those horses, there was no stopping him. So horses know what they're running against. You know, you sometimes see a horse that's a little more antsy in the paddock, a little more washed out, you know. Whether that's just the horse, you don't know, or they know that it's a tough competition. But you see a horse that's walking around kind of all puffed up, like almost Inyata used to do, how she used to strut her stuff. That was a good sign of a horse.
Yeah, it's amazing how that happens, and a lot of people question you when you talk about that. You know, how do horses know who they're running against? But it is so visual. Once you've done it enough or been around it a lot, you can actually see that that horse has in its mind that they're going to beat that field or at least give it their best shot. You know, and then other times you see horses that come in and they're very nondescript. I mean, they just are walking around there like they don't care, you know, and that those are the ones that are overmatched. And if you spend a little time, it's easy to see. But most of the public and other people, they just don't understand that. And they think you're, you know, talking a bunch of BS.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a big thing. And, you know, one of the things really quick is that horses are a lot smarter than we take them for.
Natalie, the next time you see a horse you really like in the paddock, do you promise to text me?
Yeah, my next paddock pick, I will.
You know, I mean, I could use a little extra coin over here, a little extra bankroll.
You definitely need all the help you can get.
And I can take it and bet it on every one of Natalie's horses. And when she breaks through very, very soon, then I can cash out on that one, too. Do you ever bet on your own horses, Natalie?
No, I don't even bet at all. But they always say it's bad luck to bet on your own horses.
They say it's bad luck to carry 50s around at the track, too. But I've had very good luck with 50s in my pocket at the racetrack.
I don't know about all this luck stuff. I don't think it's...
You know, people have certain superstitions. Like, for instance, my dad has a superstition about doing interviews before he runs races. So a lot of times you won't see him do an interview in the paddock. But at the time when I was a track photographer, I had a superstition of taking pictures of my dad's horses. So I wouldn't take photos of them. Like, I'd be like, I'm not taking pictures of your horses at all, because I noticed it was just maybe a couple of days, but every time I take a picture, the horse wouldn't win. But if I wasn't out there, the horse would win. And so I stopped taking. I was like, sorry, Dad, I don't have any pictures for you.
You're a jinx.
Yeah, exactly.
How about now? Do you have your own superstitions?
Well, poor Jason Blewett, I kind of called him out on it the other day because he was picking a couple of my horses on top, and they weren't, you know, they weren't running bad, but the filly, like I said, was Jezebel Jones, who dwelted, and the other filly just kind of, I think she ended up third, so I told him, I was like, you can't pick my horses on top anymore. You know, they don't seem to be running up to par when you pick them on top. So that was a superstition until he chose another horse when I ran a filly named Silver Threads, and she ended up... He didn't put her on top. I was like, okay, you're off the hook now. You can start picking these horses.
That's funny. I know a lot of owners will have superstitions. Trainers, as you hear, they kind of go through the same thing. And when you're winning, though, and you're on that hot streak, there's nothing that you want to change. And I know your dad has experienced that several times. I'm sure that he continues with that same regimen every time he's on a hot streak.
Yeah, you know, in this business, you'll find there are a lot of ups and downs. You know, when I was working for my dad at the time a couple of years ago, he had 16 horses during the summertime. And during the wintertime, he went down to 13. And now he's back up to 50 again. So, I mean, it's so give and take, where I know that my horses aren't running bad at all. But I know it can keep on going up. But then I also know that what goes up sometimes has got to come down.
If you were going to put your finger on the one piece of advice that your dad has given to you and gave to you when you went out on your own, What would that one piece of advice be that you're always going to cherish?
That patience is key with every animal. You know, I the first couple of horses I got when I first pulled out my trainer's license were not easy. The first week I got my trainer's license, I unfortunately, and I still struggle with it today, I have thoracic outlet syndrome in my right shoulder. I was poning a horse, and he tried to go the opposite way, and he completely pulled out my shoulder. So I have complete nerve damage in my whole right side. My hand stops, I was always shaking, you know, I dropped things. But I was always patient with the animal, no matter if I was hurt or what. So he was always big on that. And that's what made him such a great horseman, too, is he's very patient with the animal.
Is that hard to do sometimes, to be patient?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times, what helps me a lot is I listen to music at times, and that helps me take a deep breath. You know, like you said, you got horses that... Sometimes they want to be a little cheeky, but I know that you can't beat up on them because it's not their fault. You know, like, for instance, that horse Sherpa, how I said he's a little quirky. He's afraid of other horses. So being on him, he's not that fun to ride at times because he will either wheel or he'll try to run away from another horse. But I know I'm not going to get after him because it's like you're trying to – it's almost like you're scolding a baby for being afraid of something. You can't. They just don't know.
Yeah, you might want to put another horse in the stall with him for a few days and and let him get used to it. I've seen Bruce Headley do that several times. Mike Mitchell did it a couple times. And sometimes that'll get him over that. That's really tough to overcome sometimes.
I've never heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. A lot of horses are afraid of other horses.
Wow.
They would just as soon be by themselves.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something. So my old show horse barn was at a farm we call here named Circle S. It's down here in Davie, Florida. And Wesley Ward would bring his babies here to break them. So I'd always see Wesley. You know, I know Wesley pretty well. My mom taught his kids. When I watch him break these babies, and he, when they first get in, he'd stick two babies in the same stall, and they'd be there for, you know, a little while. And then they'd go and train, and then they go back together. And I've always remembered that. That's probably definitely a good thing to get horses used to each other.
Natalie Fox, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Natalie, inside of 4 minutes to go on the program. It's really gone by quickly. Really enjoyed the visit. You mentioned listening to music, and you said that helps you kind of relax and stay focused. What do you listen to?
You know, it kind of depends on my mood. Right now I'm in a country music mood, but, you know, I go through phases, honestly. I either listen to rap or alternative, but right now it's all country.
Who's your favorite country artist?
Right now, it's probably got to be Kane Brown. I really like Kane. I think he's good. But I was really lucky to see Tim McGraw in concert. He was great. Florida Georgia Line. You know, I like them all.
Yeah, no, pretty special. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to have a little interview this weekend with Toby Keith. He's a big horse guy, and I had a chance to catch up with him this past week. So looking forward to that interview coming up Saturday morning on our Equine Forum show that folks can tune into from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Same channel, Sirius 219 XM channel 201 and online at horseracingradio.net. All right, so Natalie, we like to always end this program by asking folks or asking trainers to tell us something about them that people might not know. You already said you enjoy certain types of music. You said you like to work out. What other interests do you have when you finally get a chance to be away from the racetrack for a little bit?
That's a good question. I don't really know. You know, I sleep a lot, so I do a lot of the show horses, but horses are my whole life. I'm not afraid to admit that.
And you shouldn't be. How many times do we hear that answer, Jude?
A lot of trainers.
You know what I'll tell you is before I decided to go out on training, I was studying to go into school for marine biology. I really like marine sciences, and that was going to be one thing I was really looking into doing, and then yet again the horses took over. Not that I'm upset with that at all, but marine biology was something I was really interested in.
Wow. A major in training horses and a minor in marine biology.
Yeah. Maybe she should train seahorses.
Well, Natalie, that's great. It's been a lot of fun to hear your story. We want to wish you all the best moving forward and continued success. And let's go get that very first victory. We're going to be cheering for you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was a pleasure. Thank you a lot.
All right. Natalie Fox with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Again, another enjoyable visit. Somebody just getting started with their career. And somebody, I know for a fact, when you listen to that program, somebody you're going to hear a lot more from up the road.
Oh, yeah. She's got a lot of blue sky ahead.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, been fun having you with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We're going to talk to you next week. Another brand new edition of Trainer Talk on tap next Wednesday night. If you miss any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this show. All of our shows, they're there at horseracingradio.net. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week on Trainer Talk. Thanks for listening.